It's an honor for me to be here visiting with you today. However, I've done this for quite some years. I feel like a freshman when I look at the situation we have laid out ahead of us. And Carol did a good job of covering some of those uncertainties, and they certainly I agree with it. And that's really something we're going to emphasize along the way. I do have a copy of paper here with some summaries, and all my slides are in that paper if any of you are interested. One little thing I want to point out here, that Texans and Texas A&M, we're thinking ahead, and so we've already changed the name of the Agricultural Extension Service to Texas AgriLife Extension Service. The experiment station will carry the same AgriLife experiment station. The main reason for this is we've had a little bit a problem with communicating with consumers. We've always said that if you eat, you're in agriculture. Now we're changing the image that agriculture and what we do and how it works and the international markets are going to affect your life. If you don't think so, you go to the grocery store and look at the price of milk now and a year ago, or eggs, or broilers. We've moved into a new era. I want to emphasize that the numbers that I'm using today are mine. Carol did a good job of saying they have no official number. We get into ideas along the way, and I can tell you for sure that I got these numbers off of my Big Chief tablet with a number 2 pencil, which means that I will be changing these numbers probably Friday this week. That's why we have monthly ag marketing conferences and so forth. And O.A. Cleveland here is sitting, and he's on that program, too. To lay a little groundwork, and we'll lay a little background, we're going to look a little bit deeper into the acreage question and the alternatives, and then we're going to move into the background of prices, and we'll end up with some guesstimates of price. We're not projecting price. We're not estimating price. It is a guesstimate. So you are well aware of what's going on, globalization. I mean, the world's getting smaller. Comparative advantage dominates, and that's any way you want to measure it. If you want to go look at, see your comparative advantage of planting corn or soybeans or cotton, that's one. If you want to look at the comparative advantage of growing cotton in the southeast or the delta or the southwest or the west, it's all comparative advantage, and your comparative advantage with China and India. One thing that makes the situation very complex as far as prices are concerned is that the international domestic or the international market is made up of both domestic and trade policies in addition to supply and demand. We've dealt with supply and demand, and that's been pretty firm here in the United States as long as our domestic demand and use of cotton was most of it coming from our own mills. Now, most all countries can tinker with the trade rules and regulations to import or export cotton or import or export textiles. And we need, I think, a good close watch of trade regulations. And we've got WTO in the background, but we don't know for sure what's going to happen. So we look at the U.S. cotton market. It's export-driven mix of domestic demand and policy, market shifts without warning, and export market is extremely complex. We have some good opportunities. Here in America, we are one of the biggest consumers of cotton textiles. It's somewhere around 23 million, which is a pretty good market in the other major countries and foreign countries sure like our domestic demand for cotton. One of the things I want to say in the background of what we're talking about today, we are expecting the United States to go at least into a slowdown of economic growth and perhaps a recession. And that could slow down the demand for cotton, and that slow down the demand in China because they need cotton from us to make it a textile to ship back to us, textiles. So it is a very important thing, and we think the foreign countries, they'll slow down a little bit in their demand side. So that's a little bit background that we need to watch for. As you know, you're working on a cost effective from field to fabric. We have no room for any slippage in the whole system of the industry of the United States cotton industry. Production systems have been revamped. I want to congratulate all of the growers of cotton in the United States and in Texas in particular. We are working, and you have developed a very productive, and you're adopting more productive systems. The marketing channels have had a little bit slower reaction. It's pretty hard to move warehouses from the Delta in Memphis area out to California or wherever it is we're going to assemble cotton to ship overseas. So we've got a little bit of transportation problems. We've got to move the cotton to where it belongs. That's going to be rearranging to some degree. There are other things that will go along with that. The economics will be the guiding force. Electronic futures and cash markets, we've now moved into where the futures price that you're looking at is mostly by an electronic market, and it trades most hours of the day. The cash market has an electronic market, and being from Texas and we developed Telcot, I cannot understand why there are producers in the United States that are not watching the scene. I mean, you don't have to use it if you don't want to, but it's a world of information, and it's going to shrink the market. It'll be able to, you know, China or wherever the buyers are, they can see what's happening in our market, and we need to kind of follow along with that. And, you know, it, one of the good things is Telcot, electronic markets were developed in Texas. Our Texas growers are pretty well informed and tying the seam in much greater numbers than the rest of the United States. Textile manufacturers are just seeking productivity, and that's a vicious job to do. And I think it's irreversible that we've cut down our textile industry in America by almost half. Now I'll move into the dilemma that we have now with how many acres are going to be planted and the relative prices of the corn, the soybeans, the wheat, and the cotton, and what all is that doing? As Carol Skelly pointed out, the conventional thinking of us that think about these things pretty long and hard is that the acreage in the United States will be somewhere between 10 million and 9 million. I have picked the middle number. Right now I'm looking at 9.5 million acres. If we have an 850-pound yield, it'll put us in with a little bit more than 15 million acre production. If you've got a very, very high yield of 900 pounds, you would get 16 million bales, and a low yield with 14. So I'm using a 14 to 16 range with 15 to work my numbers. That is quite a bit lower than we had this year, and certainly lower production than we had 2 years ago. We have data behind us, and one of the things we looked at is how many acres planted are lost. And the average for the last 7 years is 9, so I calculate my harvested acres as 91% of planted. We also note here how the yield has increased across the United States. But let me point out that this year, as you see, less than 3% abandonment. That hasn't happened in the United States very many times. And Texas was a part of that because we had such a good growing season that most all of our cotton that was planted was harvested. We also are noting that the upland planted acreage is changing by region. Here's just a little bit of a view of what it was in the percentage shares by the four major regions. In 2001, when we had that big acreage planted of 15.5 million, Southwest had only 41% of the area. The West had 6, the Southeast 23, and the Delta 30%. As we look at the 2007 crop, 10.5 million upland acres planted. Southwest has moved up to 49%, and I expect Texas alone to have over half of all the planted acreage in the United States for this coming year. The West is shrinking, as was pointed out. The Southeast is having trouble with weather and so forth. And the kind of the surprise to me is here the Delta is shrinking, but it's not reality if you think about $5 a bushel corn and $12 a bushel soybeans, that the Delta has some good land that you can produce. But I do want to point out what this means with Texas carrying so much weight. If we have bad weather in Texas, it doesn't take very much of it to change our production by 2 million bales. So if we're projecting 15 and we have a bad year in Texas alone, we may get down to 13 million bales, and that would tighten up the situation considerably. We lose at least 10% of our acreage in Texas every year. It may be some of the drought, but we've got hailstorms, sandstorms, and those kinds of adverse conditions that hit Texas pretty hard. Planted acres have gone down, as we've talked about. The yield has skyrocketed unbelievably. Texas has a record yield this year. And we just want to point out here, I borrowed this from the Farmer Stockman issue. It's a white field of cotton. That field of cotton is in the corner of the Texas Panhandle in Oklahoma, an area that had tough time planting, producing 3/4 of a bale per acre a few years ago. That field of cotton is a little bit better than 3.5 bales per acre. And that's in the northern tier of the Texas growing area. And with this is new varieties and new technology, and it really makes a high yield. Shifting a little bit to prices, I always like to look at the high and low and the close of the settlement prices of December contracts. That's for the entire contract period. If it's 2 years, it's over a two-year period. You can easily recognize that we've had a fairly flat market in the last few years. I want you to also note that the 10-year average high is 71 cents, and the 10-year low is 46 about. So we're now over 71 cents. So we're in the territory that we haven't been since 03, October 03. And October 03 reached 82.7. Personally, we've got to get December over 80 cents to do much with this market. And when you get export reports like we got this morning, which was a very poor numbers, it is during the holiday season, but it is a little bit of a downside on the market when you get numbers that just aren't going to fit. Now, as Carol pointed out very quickly, my seasonal export numbers fit that pattern that China buys heavily in the spring of the year. But we're going to have to see some really strong weeks of exports for a number of weeks to get to 16.2. It's still reachable, but the situation is, if we don't, our carryover will be about 8 million bales, and that weighs heavily on the 06 and 07 crop. I don't expect the crop that you've got harvested, and some of you have gotten sold and some of you haven't, 60 to 70 cents on that price, futures price, is going to be the range. If it gets over 70, and we may do that with the March and July contracts, but it's going to be a hard time to get this market to stay up for the old crop. We just have a big supply of crop. We carried over 9.5 from last year. Yeah. So it's just a big supply. One of the key indexes that I watch is the index versus A index versus exporting nations and stock to use in those countries. If you will get a glance of this chart, you'll see the A index goes in the opposite direction of the export nation stocks to use. And it does it rather consistently. That's what I like about it. We see in a lot of the world market, international market, being restructured. But this one seems to be hanging in there pretty good because it is export nations, and that includes all the world that exports cotton. If you'll note, we see the export nation stocks to use, the greenish line, has dropped sharply in the last 2 years, and we see that export nation stocks to use, A index dropped sharply, and now it's going up, and stocks to use is going down. So you've got a good relationship there. So that's where I'm looking at the market. Should have good support throughout the world. Now, I'll review a few things that Carol spoke about, which we've got about the same kinds of numbers, a little different for 08, but we end up the same place. Right now, I have world foreign consumption. Foreign cotton consumption way above foreign cotton production, the green line. Right now, it spreads over 19 million bale deficit, and that is good news to us in the United States. I mean, this is all the foreign countries' production consumption. Where are they going to get to fill the gap? They've about used up all their excess stocks, so they're going to have to come to us if they need them, and we think the consumption will hold up pretty good. It certainly it'd be flat for this coming year, and we've got it marked up a little bit. Foreign cotton production and consumption, if you look at the blue lines across here, we clearly show that now for 08 will be the fourth year where consumption exceeds foreign production. So it's another indicator of market support. World production and consumption. The blue is the consumption, and so we've got 2 years of considerably more consumption going, and then production. And if you look at the little yellow line, world carryover stocks are going down, and that too is a very market price supporting issue. Okay, let's look at some of the other indicators. One of the things that I do, and I will point out that the markets are being restructured, and when you have an export-driven market, it may not fit what we look at here over the time period that I've got, which is the late 90s mostly. But I go back and look at years when our supply decreases by more than 500,000 bales. When it does, and that got the smaller carryover is what I call it, we've got about 6 years listed there, 89 to 03, when stocks go down. What happens to the price? The green line, or the white line, shows the average for those years. So if that's the case, the market's got quite a bit of strength lying just ahead of us, and it is better. If this market doesn't wake up, we'll lose more acreage to soybeans and corn than we have already lost. So that's I think the final decisions for cotton planting and so forth, it's going to have to be made in about 6 weeks. So if this market is going to buy any acres, it's going to have to buy them pretty quick. Watch the market to see if it's paying attention. You know, it's got tremendous resistance on December 08 at 79 cents. That whole arena between 78 and 80 cents is one big obstacle to this market. If we bounce off of it several times, then it's going to probably not be as strong a market later on unless we have a short crop. But if we go in here in a couple of weeks or 3 weeks and this market takes a new run and it goes through 80 cents, then you can kind of lean back and think a little bit about fixing prices. And I would think the market would go to 83 cents. Don't hold it for 85. So where are we? Last year, and we, you know, that's a year, actually stocks are decreasing in 07, pretty flat market. 08, December, up to current data, it's, you know, 10 cents above last year, and it's already made an uptick. So we will be watching this extremely closely to see what happens. The other indicator that I look at, and I'm summarizing today, leaving out a lot of information that goes in between, but I'm using what I think is some of the most important information, and that's world stocks to use and the A index. So if you look over on the right-hand side, you'll see the A index for this crop year 07 running about 69 cents. Using my world numbers for 08, I get a stocks to use that's around 38%, and I get an A index that's roughly at 75 cents or the mid-70s. Now remember, the A index is, in history shows that A index normally runs at least 5 and maybe 6 cents or higher, it's variable, above New York futures. So if you take the A index at 75 and knock off about 5 cents for the regular difference between New York and the A, it puts pressure on the New York futures to not stay up or run up for very long. Also, we run a guesstimate of what the price received by producers would be for 08, and we do that with the futures market. I do nothing except we run the futures market, and we go back to 5 years history, could compare the futures market with the average price received, and we come up with an estimate using October 07, December 07, October 08, December 08, and March, May, and July 09. Those futures prices right now are showing that we're not anywhere close to you getting a countercyclical payment for this coming year. Now, you've got one coming out of the current crop. We just don't know if it's going to be 2 cents off or 3 cents off or four, but it'll be a pretty good countercyclical payment that many of you hedged and made an extra nickel or dime out of that, and which we highly recommend in the new world, no matter how you market your cotton. If you turn over to a pool, that just leaves you with a lot of the time to study and to think the market and about the market and pick up some extra income by being astute and watching the market and being careful with it. Don't take straight futures. I'm talking about using options. What happens? We've got a futures that I think is fairly stable. I'm not convinced that we're going to deal with that 80 cents real clearly in this next 6 weeks. It may, so I go back and point out that it's possibly as high as 85. But that's as far as I'm going to go with the 07, 08 market, or the December 08 futures. Around the high 70 and maybe low 80s. But I would think about pricing. If this market goes up to 79, bounces off of that for 3 or 4 or 5 weeks, then you might think about putting some floors in, but don't put a top in. Because if we have bad weather in Texas, you'll have 2 million bales less cotton, and that will surely make some difference. So in conclusion, want to reemphasize, great deal of uncertainty. It affects everyone in the industry, both the sellers and the buyers. And we think that cotton options are continually going to be used more and more to ensure that price, because you'd have avoid your market risk when you use options. But how you use options is kind of important. But we're going to take care of that for you too. Cotton Incorporated has been kind enough to sponsor all their workshops. And we're going to talk about how the options worked in this past year, talk about the good strategies, talk about the not-so-good strategies. Then we're going to talk about some of the strategies we might use for this coming year and what mainly to watch for. It's your decision. But we want to bring you up to date as to what to watch and how to package the situation. And we'll be in Memphis at the Peabody the 13th of February. It'll be the regulars that you hear, Carl Anderson, Mark Stevens, Kelly Merrick, John Robinson, O.A. Cleveland. And then we'll move to San Joaquin Valley, Harris Ranch on March 26th, and we'll then come back to Lubbock, Texas on the 8th. I want to wish all of you a very prosperous marketing year. I think you've got some of the best opportunities to make money out of this market that we've had in a number of years. We are looking for December 08 to get close to the 80 cents. We go 5 cents either side. And the best news is 09. If we run our stocks down to where they would go, if we use the numbers I'm estimating today, we'll run our U.S. stocks down by the end of this 08 crop year, or in 09, all the way down to the levels where it's got to be market supportive. And we'll have an easy December 09. I think it's pretty easy to get 95 cents. And it could go to 98 real long, but watch out. Don't get hoggish. If we get up there, don't sit around and wait to sell your cotton at a dollar a pound. Like I had a bunch of La Mesa cotton farmers, some of the smartest we have in Texas. I was driving through La Mesa, stopped in the Dairy Queen. I really need a cup of coffee. I kind of walked in, got my cup of coffee, and sat down and take a little break. And here, you know, were all the cotton growers in that area. They sitting around drinking coffee. And I overheard them talk with each other and agree, I'm not going to sell my cotton until it gets a dollar a pound. Guess what? It got to 98 and quit. And then they called up and said, when it's going to get back to a dollar. I only observe the market, kind of interpret the market, but I can't move the market. So I want to thank you for your patience, and I think the future for cotton is bright. Marketing cotton for the next several years will be the brightest we've had in years since about 1994. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Anderson. We do have some time for questions. We've covered a wide range of issues, and obviously one of the most important issues people are interested in is some more details on the price. But I guess, you know, a question that I had... concern some of these, I guess we should have made a better point of like saying we had time for discussion. Well, actually, Dr. Anderson, one of the things I was wondering is you think you said 9.5 million acres was your U.S. prediction? Okay. I was just curious, what would be the lowest area that would, if it happened, would not be a big shock to you? I think you had a bottom of 9, but could it go lower than that under some strange circumstance?
Okay. That is a good question. We're using 9 as kind of the floor, 9 million acres.
Oh, here.
And Steve's question. The question is, can we get less than 9 million acres planted this year? I don't buy that rather, you know, because I think the infrastructure, the cotton, we got down into it pretty deep last year. What I'm hearing from some of the people is that the Delta, Arkansas cut acreage heavy. I don't know about Mississippi much, and Arkansas will cut acres, but when they take off this year's acres, they're not going to add up all that fast, and it would be very difficult. I mean, we got 10.8, and so you'd have to take off 1.8. I don't think we'll get that. I think it more likely we'll get some higher prices for cotton, and it may not go down below the 9.5 I'm using. It'll be between 10 and 9.5.
Okay, well, thank you. That's it is, you know, one of the things we can't do at USDA, of course, is forecast prices by law, but it is also one of the things we can't necessarily do very well just by virtue of our abilities as the area. So it's good to get some boundaries on that.
Thank you, John. That's a very good point. Rainfall and weather is going to be so much now that we've got such a large percentage in Texas and it's being planted. We plant about two-thirds of Texas acres in dry land.
Is there another question for the audience? Because actually I had a sort of change of gear. Like it's sort of been thinking of some fairly short-term questions, but one of the things that came to mind when I was hearing Joe talk about, you know, whether we had a reform farm bill and whether that might be a veto question. And, you know, one of the issues, I guess, whether it's a reform bill is the WTO challenges. And I guess we all are very familiar with the cotton challenge. But I guess then there's those new ones coming along. And I was just curious of, you know, if you had any thoughts on that, if to the extent that when people are thinking about whether we need a reform bill, if they're just thinking about the cotton challenge, or to what extent these other challenges have some meaning within the next cycle of farm legislation.
Well, I know for a fact that some of the countries that were looking at challenging other commodities have already decided not to because of the prices. So that has a bearing. Obviously, high prices are going to discourage countries from putting the time and effort and money involved into bringing these cases together whenever their other commodity prices are significantly higher than they were before. But the bills that have come out of both of the House and the Senate are not worse in terms of being problems for the WTO necessarily, but they're not significantly better.
Okay, well, that is this question about how WTO relates to the U.S. has sort of changed a lot over the last several years and in attitudes as well. So it's interesting to see, it's nice to know that though the high prices didn't make the old ones go away, maybe they'll take some of the new ones out. And I guess if we do have something else on the program, but I guess I would want to toss a question at Carol. It's sort of you alluded to a longstanding concern about financial problems in China's textile mills. You know, it's something that seems to come up even though the exports keep rolling out. And I was curious if maybe you saw whether these problems are becoming more credible in the future. I mean, the reserve requirements and credit problems in China seem to be more and more putting on credit requirements. And I was just curious if you had some thoughts as to whether we could see some profitability issues begin to affect China's mills, or if it's something else that's keeping them from buying.
You know, it's really very difficult to tell because the anecdotal information is so different from what's being reflected in the trade data that we're looking at. When I showed that chart that showed the November net cotton textile imports or exports, still running at a 20% growth rate. That's based on fairly hard data that we at USDA extract from the textile trade information. It's not being reported by mills. It's actually world trade information in various textile categories. Now you could argue, I think what we're hearing not only in China but in other places in the world is that with higher cotton prices, mills are having much more difficulty passing those increases along to their customers. You could argue that that data that we're looking at is lagged because in order to export in November, you would have had to spin it back in, you know, the summer probably. So it's possible that we'll see that decline. The problem is we're going to have to see it decline fairly significantly just to have our world consumption estimate drop from the 4.5% that we're carrying this year down to 3%. So it's really difficult to see where those structural problems to begin with are not reflected in the data. And also, even if they are, we are already reflecting some of that, I think, by being more conservative in our consumption growth estimate for next year. So it's a real puzzle and something that we study a lot, but I don't think have any real resounding conclusions at the moment.
Yeah, thank you, Carol. Yeah, it is. It's one of the things, one of the ways that keep my job at USDA was whenever somebody knew so I was working on cotton, I talked to them for hours and hours and hours about China's textile mills and things, and they go away. So it's a very difficult question. And I guess, we have another question.
Government policies all seem to be geared more toward subsidizing grain and food security than they are cotton. But recently, a couple of weeks ago, Cotton Outlook ran a series of reports from various provinces in China about their expectations for planning for the upcoming spring. And the majority, you know, it wasn't that scientific and they weren't all reporting, but most of them said that they expect to plant more cotton next spring. The other thing that's been happening in China, production, about a third of it's grown in the far western Xinjiang province, where we've had a lot of data difficulties, and the Chinese government has also. But there does appear to be a sort of an expansionary trend in the area of Xinjiang, which is affecting the total, which is not an area where you get as much competition with food grade.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, it is interesting. They are planting more cotton in China. But now we have O.A. Cleveland here. We've been sort of talking about cotton markets and so forth, and O.A. is going to bring us something where we actually about people who actually do it. And so I'll turn it over to O.A. for the award.
Thank you.